Oh, we have a caller. It's Matt. I'm going to pick up the phone now. Let's see. Hello, Matt. You're on the air. Can you hear us?
Good evening, yes.
Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. We're doing good. We're having a good time. Glad you called.
Thank you.
What is your question tonight?
Well, I emailed some pictures to Rob, and he graciously posted them to Facebook of two objects that Jessica and I found on Kruzoff Island. Mm-hmm. One was at Brent's Beach on the eastern side, and it's a big plastic tube about 4 feet long with some threading on one end, and we were puzzling over what that might be.
I'm pulling it up for them right now. Just 1 second.
Okay.
Is it gray?
Yeah, it's gray.
Looks, yeah.
Is it this?
Oh, yeah, that's...
Well, maybe not.
No, that's
not a sonar buoy.
We're looking. We're examining.
How heavy is that?
He says, how heavy is it?
It was pretty light. It was hollow plastic. It felt like...
Got another picture you could put up there?
He's wondering if you have another picture.
That looks like some kind of float, left off an outrigger or something, doesn't it?
Yeah. It seemed like a float that one end got unscrewed of or something.
That's a toughie. You got your hand on...
We're examining. Just 1 second. Let's see.
It almost looks like a toy boat with a mast.
Oh, you guys are looking at the boat thing. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, we're looking at the boat picture. Yeah, we'll scan to the other picture in a second.
There's a lot of kids putting out model boats now. And some of them, you know, they're going to get really beat up. It looks like that might have been a model boat at one time.
That's what we were wondering. That was actually on the west side of Kruzoff, a two-mile-long sandy beach down south of Port Mary.
Did you have a look at, are there any possible writings on it?
I couldn't see anything that looked like writing. I think you might see a little bit of paint that's pretty scraped off there, some reddish tint to it.
Yeah, that could be the color of the boat. I think I know of about 200 or 300, 400 vessels that have been launched by kids.
Yeah, it was just heavy and oblong enough, and it was just a thick enough brush. I didn't want to carry it back to the cabin.
If you please send me a picture, I'll put that in the alert, I think.
Okay.
And we'll keep... Rob just posted the other picture. Let me share that with them. Here it is.
That's a sonar buoy tube.
Okay, what's that for?
That is...
Finding submarines.
Anti-submarine warfare. They're hunting Russian submarines off the coast here. And if you ever see a P-3 Orion, it's got the stinger tail. If you look really closely at the bottom of the belly of the Orion, it would have like 48 round tubes. And there's a technician inside that as the Orion flies its pattern, he pushes buttons and it goes boom, 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 boom. Each one is a $5,000 sonar buoy. Down it goes and radios back the where Russian submarines might be. And... when they get back, they throw the container, which is that gray thing you're holding, they throw those in the water.
Okay.
the thing in the top of the bag is a hagfish trap. There's a gray perforated tube there.
Yeah.
That's for catching hagfish, which are some slimy eel-like things, right?
Yeah, they're called slime eels. Sorry, Dean, I'll ruin your dinner. Slime eel, if you've ever held one, will slime you. So if you hold it up to your shoulders, it's going to run mucus all the way down your body. It's really awful.
Well, this conversation got fun really quickly.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, Matt, thank you. Do you have another question?
I have one other question for you. I've found a ton of bright red large light bulbs along the outer coast with oriental writing on it. Any ideas?
Yeah, they're for squid fishing. If you've seen a vessel that's maybe 100 feet long, they'll put a necklace of bulbs like this around the outside of the vessel. And so at night, the squid come up, and the squid vessel lowers the necklace down, lights up these brilliant, these glowing red bulbs. And, you know, we don't have one here, but they're about a foot long. And they're really powerful, and they're gorgeous. But when they burn out, they get chucked over the side. And they are works of art, if you've ever looked at the electrical elements inside. So it would be a really great conversation piece at your dinner table to have one all polished up.
I agree. Unfortunately, conversation pieces like that are perhaps treasures to some and trash to others. So I don't know that I'd be allowed to keep that at my dinner table.
Well, you might want to hang it from the ceiling. That would be cool.
It would be.
I kept mine with my glass balls.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, Matt?
No, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
You've got some cool stuff there.
Thank you.
Thanks. And that brings us to, Matt was calling to show them some of the things he's found. And if you don't have time to call in now, you can actually go on Sunday to the Beachcombers Fair. That's from 1 to 3 on Sunday at Harrigan Centennial Hall. And you do this every year at Pass Across the Pacific. You have people come in. It's sort of like an antiques roadshow of the ocean, if you will.
That's it.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Antiques, worthless flotsam.
And what can people bring to you?
Anything. Almost anything. Bring it in and we'll try to figure it out, because most things are not known what they are. The ocean is full of unidentified objects, UFOs.
What's the strangest thing somebody's brought to you at one of these fairs? What's the most memorable item?
The mermaid.
Oh yeah, that's the most memorable thing. Oh, there are two. Now I've got it.
Okay.
There are two. The first one is a skeleton in a survival suit. Not the whole thing, but the picture and where to go to get the autopsy. The skeleton washed up in a blue Bailey survival suit in 1982 on Oahu. Mm-hmm. We think he was a fisherman from the Gulf of Alaska, and right now we're working on doing the ID. It's a cold case because 1982, and we still don't know who the gentleman is, so we're working on that. Now, the other one was an aluminum mermaid. She's exquisite. She's about 4 foot tall. She looks like she's right out of a carnival. She's got a sea star in her hair. She's sand cast aluminum, and nobody knows who she is. And you look at her and you say, oh, what? This is a work of art. But we don't know who she is.
Or what time period it's from or
no,
anything.
No, but she washed up in Yakutat about 5 or 10 years ago. So there are haunting things that you're not able to really solve. Mm-hmm. So who is the skeleton? Who's the missing fisherman? Who's the mermaid?
And there is a less fun and whimsical side to this work, which is, finding, you mentioned earlier, bones in shoes that float up on the beach.
And that's pretty common. We've got 14 shoes with bones in them in the British Columbia waters. And people call me and they'll say, oh, I want to know about that chainsaw massacre. And I said, what are you talking about? And he says, what about all those bones and shoes? I said, that's just a natural process. In British Columbia, there's 2,400 people missing, officially missing. Some of them go in the water. Mm-hmm. And when your body comes apart in the water, guess where your body comes apart? At the joints. And guess what parts of your body have flotation devices around them? Your feet, because your shoes float. So when the body comes apart, and the ocean is a giant body farm, that's what happens. The shoes come ashore with the feet.
But unlike with bodies that decompose on land, where we've been able to kind of study that extensively, like you said, at the body farm in Kentucky,
right,
to see the rates of decomposition, within the ocean, that's a little bit trickier, right?
Right. That's because the bones in the sneakers that wash up are from normal citizens, not criminals. The DNA databases are criminal database DNA. Mm-hmm. So we can't identify the people very easily because they're just average great citizens. So we're kind of stuck. And the RCMPs in Canada are doing a great job, and they're figuring it out slowly, but it's millions of dollars to figure out who these 14 people are.
Oh, wow.
So that's a big challenge.
And let's talk about some more beach stuff. And also, if you're listening, and we still have about 20 minutes left, if you'd like to call in and you found something or you have a question for Curtis and Dean, you can call 747-5877, or you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. I do see some, they look like bones over here. What are these?
Oh, those are...
Well, they're light. They're foam. I expected them to be much heavier when I picked them up.
You would think we brought bones in.
I don't know.
I do have. I used to carry a skull skeleton, a deer skull, in my trunk of my car, just to. But I gave it away. Now those are anti sandals. If you take that Boltio sandal over there, now you hold it up and you'll see. That it was a punched, the sole was punched out from a big sheet of foam.
Okay.
Plastic foam. You see how you can see the what's left is the on the.
Look at the foam and it kind of looks like heels. You see that are cut away.
Oh.
That's what happens.
Okay.
So the foam comes in big sheets of about 4 by 8 feet. I've seen the machines, and so it has a pattern. And when the pattern comes down on the foam and it goes back up again, poof, out come all these sandal soles.
Mm-hmm.
And what's left is the imprints, the cutouts. So it's sort of like making cookies, right? If you go through and make cookies, what's left is the leftover cookie dough, and you're trying to do is you mash it up
and do it again
and do it again and make more cookies.
Right.
Well, you can't do that with this. So what the fishermen do, you see the rope that's holding those two, they tie them together and roll them up and make them into fishing floats.
Oh, okay.
And those wash up as, I call them anti-sandals.
And I see a tennis shoe here as well. Is this one of the original Nikes?
That is a 1994 Nike. For somebody in Indiana ordered 29,000 of the same design. You see the double cross in the sole of the bottom? that white double cross?
Oh, yes, I do see that.
That is the giveaway. There were 29,000 identical, varied by size, of course, design Nikes in two containers. I never could figure out who ordered such things. Maybe it was a billionaire fetish who wanted that particular design. I never figured it out, but I know that every time I went to the beach, I could find those.
Wow.
And I have, somebody sent me two size 13 so I could wear them.
So does Nike work with you at all? Do they give you answers?
Yeah, they do. They, as much as they can, they give me answers. And without them, Nike's the only shoe company that will tell me
what their orders are.
When a shoe goes overboard, it has a point A, latitude, longitude, and date. If I don't have that, I can't computer model where they're going to go.
What computer model? Can you tell me what the program is that you use how it was designed?
It was designed by a friend of mine, Jim Ingram. He is called Ocean Surface Current Simulator, and he designed it to track salmon. And when the Nikes first washed up, I said, aha, I know how to do this. So I called Jim and I said, you know, a floating sneaker is nothing more than a salmon without fins. He says, that'd be true. I said, could you take 29,000 finless salmon, put them in where the Nikes fell overboard, and tell me where they're going to land? And he said, I could do that. Are you going to tell me where they landed? I said, no, this is a blind test. I want to see how good you really are. And so I did that, and he was spot on to the day.
Wow.
South Vancouver Island, just incredible. And so he had been using it for salmon, and for the last 20 years of his life, most of his published papers were on finless salmon.
When you began focusing on flotsam, did you have any idea or any prediction of, you know, how long some of these things would stay in the ocean and how long later on you'd keep finding them? You know, 25 years is such a long time for these to be out there and still washing up on the shore.
I don't think Dean and I had an idea. And I don't think there's no science for that. Like the body farm, that's why they do the body farm in Kentucky, mm-hmm. to see how long bodies, nobody really knows how things come apart. And we don't know how long things last in the ocean, so...
We've learned about hockey gloves.
We did, yeah. We've learned about some things.
Hockey gloves.
Yeah, 1994, there was 34,000 hockey gloves fell overboard. And I was getting calls from people all over the country saying, we heard that there was a plane load of hockey players that went down, and we're getting all their gloves washing up. I said, I don't know about this, but I will look into it. And I actually located the gentleman who had the hockey gloves shipped from Singapore, and they were going to Connecticut. So here I had the actual invoice.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew where and when they fell overboard. And Jim, I called Jim. I said, I got a test for you. And he's spot on. He's just so good. But the hockey gloves washed up, but then they started coming apart. And if you watch a hockey glove in the water, it floats with the forefinger just out of the water where the seagulls like to land.
Like this?
Yeah, like that. And the seagulls will land on the part that's floating and pick it apart and eat all the plastic.
So that's why the coating on those fingers, it's missing.
Yes.
Because that was a seagull landing spot.
Yeah, so I had a high school class dissect a hockey glove, and they found 47 pieces in it, and it left a carcass about like that. And so beachcombers who really knew their stuff could start identifying the pieces of plastic from inside the hockey glove. And so we learned that after about 5 or 10 years, they were disintegrated. So we learned something about how long things last.
Right.
So we do have a body farm for flotsam. That's what I've learned from this hour, is we have the flotsam body hour.
And I have a couple more questions from listeners, if you would indulge me. Kevin asks if there are products that are seemingly that we would think are green or biodegradable that are actually showing up on our beaches. Is there anything that you see that maybe somebody would think that would be fine?
Does he have an example, maybe?
He doesn't have an example on me.
I'm
thinking about the microbeads specifically, using soaps and things with microplastics.
Okay, well, I'll tell you the personal example that I had. When I travel, I usually stay with, like, park rangers, and mm-hmm. I stay with Dean and Dorothy, and I stay with people who are close to the natural environment. And so I got down to Florida about 5 years ago, and Ed was there, and he's a park ranger, and he says, "Kurt, you got to look at this." And brings out his toothpaste.
Mm-hmm.
It's Crest 3D white toothpaste.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, okay, it's toothpaste." I would not have thought that this was something that was so sinister. There was death in the toothpaste. And so I said, "Well, what is it?" He says, "Go brush your teeth with this." So I did. I spit it in this cup, and I did. And there was all these little blue beads that came out, washed out. He says, "What are those beads?" I said, "I don't know." He says, "They're polyethylene, which is indestructible plastic used in toothpaste to abrade your teeth to make them whiter. And those little beads are so fine that they go right through sewage treatment plants."
Mm-hmm.
I understand now that Crest is withdrawing that product. But microbeads have been outlawed in quite a few countries, I believe. Congress has outlawed them And so you'd look at them and say, well, they can't be that harmful. The answer is microbeads go right, we cannot filter them. They go right into the ocean, and they're so fine that the plankton mistake them for food. Mm-hmm. So who would have thought that toothpaste could be so sinister? And it's not just toothpaste. Microbeads are in all the, not all, but thousands and thousands of products.
Where else do you think the work that beachcombers and people who are interested in flotsam have made an impact? I mean, I think here in Sitka even there's a lot of conversation about plastic bag use, and some restaurants are considering getting rid of straws, for example. That's kind of the hot topic right now in plastic.
Well, I try to avoid single-use items, plastic. Mm-hmm. I try, if I can, to go to a restaurant that's totally compostable, which means you're using only green plastic. So there's things you can do, like, okay, buy a stainless steel straw. Mm-hmm. I only use paper shopping bags. And when I recycle my yard waste, I pull it out and I put it in a shopping bag and I put it in the yard waste. So the Pope had a lentil directive, reduce the use of plastic. Theresa May has adopted for Britain a 25-year goal to eliminate plastic. European Union has done that. So I would say beachcombers should be very, very proud that they've raised plastic to the level of the menace that it is in the ocean. Mm-hmm. So be proud of yourself and keep up the good work.
I've noticed that there are organizations that have sponsored beach cleanups right around Sitka here, and they'll hire a boat with a crew to go down and clean up, like North Cape, for example. And there used to be an incredible amount of flotsam at North Cape, which is near Whale Bay. And I went down there the year after they cleaned it up, and it was naked. I mean, it was incredible how there wasn't much stuff there. And then I came back the next year, still not much stuff there. And then what I started doing is when we went around, Tyler and I checked the same beaches, you know, multiple times every few years, and what we're finding is that stuff, there isn't a whole lot of new stuff showing up, but it's moving around. The stuff will be reorganized on the beach, or it'll go down to the next beach or whatever. And so it's incredible to me to see how effective cleaning up a beach is, because you go by in another couple of years and you think, man, there's nothing here. This was a waste of time. In Hawaii, that's not true. They have, like, junk beach in Hawaii that they take dump trucks out every year, right?
Yeah, there's a place called Camilo Beach, a.k.a. Junk Beach, because when it was first discovered, nobody was paying attention to it, and the plastic was, I don't know, 10 foot thick. And it was a mess. And slowly we got attention drawn to it, and it's been cleaned up about every two months or so. Groups have to go out and re-clean it because it's a place where the garbage patch dumps. You know, the garbage patch is that place in the middle of the Pacific between Hawaii and San Francisco, and stuff collects there from all over the North Pacific. But it leaks. And it leaks on Camilo. And so I started going out there, I don't know, 10, 20 years ago, and the amount of material is enormous, but it since it's being leaked on by an area three times the size of Texas, it's a lot of stuff. And the bless their hearts, the people go out there and just keep cleaning and cleaning and cleaning. So it's like kind of like going in the sump of a big apartment building. You're cleaning out the sump all the time. And that's, you know, there's certain places on the planet and that's what it's like.
Do you think there's been an increase in interest in cleaning up beaches and beachcombing?
Oh,
and
definitely. If you look at the National Geographic, it has plastic in the ocean on the cover. That's big time. I had a nice interview with Laura Parker and her they're planning on a 2-year effort of plastic in the ocean. So, you know, hats off to National Geographic. There's huge movements now to get industry to stop using things like microbeads. And so I think things are going along pretty well. At some point, we're going to run out of oil. And when we run out of oil, we'll run out of plastic. So there's light at the end of the tunnel.
And we're running out of time. We have a few minutes left. Is there anything that you'd like to add or say to Sitkins about paths across the Pacific, or where they can find you, what they should bring you, what you'd like to see more of at the Beachcombers Fair?
I would love it if somebody brought in a half-ton truck of stuff from the beach and just dumped it on my table. Because I usually have dash for trashes around the country. People go out for 2 hours and bring in everything they can find. And then I go through, I get my gloves on, and I go through everything, and I give prizes for the best trash.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And there's some incredible things. So that's what I would like. Mm-hmm. I would like people to go out and bring in all the trash they can find and just bring it into Harrigan Hall, and we'll deal with it.
And remember, if it's found on the beach, it's not trash. It's a treasure.
It is a treasure.
It's a treasure.
It is.
I don't think you're going to get that offer from anybody else to bring in as much trash as you can possibly find and get such a warm reception.
Well, if there's going to be somebody out there, please bring in, send me your tired, your hungry, your trash.
Well, I want to thank you again for spending this hour with me and talking trash and about ocean science. It's been really informative for me. I don't know much, and I've been really enjoying learning from both of you.
Thank you, Catherine.
We're going to head into some classical music in just a second. I've been sitting here with Dean Orbison and Curtis Ebbesmeyer talking about flotsam. Curtis is here for Paths Across the Pacific this week, and he'll be giving a talk on Sunday morning at 10:30 at Harrigan Centennial
Saturday.
Hall.
It's
Saturday. The talk is on Saturday. Yeah. And then
the Beachcomber Fair is on
Sunday,
but we're also going out on one of the boats on Sunday morning.
Yes. An Allen Marine boat, I believe.
Yeah, we're going to go pick off trash off of a local beach. And that's Sunday morning.
That's Sunday morning at 7 o'clock. You have to buy a ticket for that at the Paths Across the Pacific.
It's really cool because they'll dump us off on a beach and we'll go pick up stuff for a few hours. And it's amazing. You think that's a pretty clean beach. No, it's not.
You'll find treasures.
It's amazing. After 2 hours, we could fill a half-ton truck.
Well, thank you again for talking to me, and I look forward to hearing more about Paths Across the Pacific. And if you want to know the dates of any of those talks, those are on our website at kcaw.org on the community calendar. Thanks again for joining me.
Thank you all for listening.